So the garden got started early, and it produced very, very well. One of my best gardens ever. And it got to the point where it was time to harvest a lot of the crops. Now, my garden isn't very big.
Okay.
I have three beds that are, let's see, they're like 5 foot by 10 foot long. But the one bed had potatoes and beans and peas in it. And all those were ready to harvest. So last week, I harvested all them. And it was a good crop of potatoes, great crop of beans and peas. And since I had that empty space, I decided I wanted to try something I'd never tried in Bradford before. I replanted it. I'm going to go for a second garden. Not the same crops. So I replanted it with, well, some of the same crops. We like the sugar snap peas, so I put a lot of those in. I put some zucchinis in. I think I can make it. it's an experiment. Let's see. I also put in some cucumbers, all from seed. And, of course, a lot of radishes. I just like to grow radishes a lot for a number of reasons. You know, it's something that a lot of other people can try too, because a seed is pretty cheap. You know, you get a pack of seed for a buck, and there may be 50 seeds in there. And of course, I planted zucchini, so I only took 3 seeds out of that pack. Now I can save that pack. I put it in a Ziploc bag, put it back in the refrigerator. You can save them seeds for a few years. So I spent less than a dime. Now, all I had to do was kind of turn the soil over a little bit, but that's no big deal in a small bed. And it may seem to some people that I put a lot in that 5 foot by 10 foot bed, but I kind of like to do that by a little bit of crowding. That way the weeds don't have a chance to grow because they're just covered by plant material and big leaves all the time. So that's something I'm trying, and I'll let you know how it turns out. Now, hopefully, we won't have a frost come early September, because then I'll be in big trouble. But I have my other two beds yet that are full of tomatoes and squash, and those I'm not going to harvest yet. They'll be there till the end of the year.
Okay. You're going to have to send us pictures so we can see.
Yeah, I should, yeah.
You tell everybody else to send pictures.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, other people may want to do that. And there are other crops that are very quick. And even if you are concerned about the frost, you know, you can still do radishes, only take 30 days. And carrots and beets and peas and beans. Those are all real short crops, we call them. And some even like the cold, the crops. Like your lettuce, you know, and some of those other ones like that, like it when it's getting cold in the fall. So go ahead and try that out, you know, just because you harvest it, you don't need to leave the ground barren. You can plant another crop and hope for the best like I'm doing.
Okay. And speaking of like frost and things like that, you also wanted to talk about preparing for winter. But before we get to that, I just want to remind people, if you have a question for Bob about his garden, your garden, or anything else, you can give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075, and you can ask your question there, because Bob's live. You can see him right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, preparing for winter, you know, knowledge is king in everything. And especially in gardening. So what I like to do during the winter, since I can't do a lot of gardening outside, there's still a little bit you can do, is I like to read about gardening. And so I brought a few books that some of the ones that I might suggest that are pretty interesting and a lot of neat facts in them. If you let me go through them here, I will. One of the first ones, and there's two books here with this, it's The Seeds of Change and The Seeds of Wealth
Oh.
And these books are by Henry Hophouse. Real interesting about plants and what they have done for man by making them healthy and by making them rich. Second Nature, another book. Michael Pollan, I have several of his books. These are all very interesting. His most famous book is The Botany of Desire.
Oh, yeah.
But any of the books that he's written are extremely interesting and full of lots of neat facts. Linda Chalkler Scott, How a Plant Works.
Oh, that's interesting.
Pretty interesting book. It tells you all the detail of how a plant does really work, how it absorbs water, sunlight, changes it. And these are written for the hobbyists. These are not textbooks. Here's the Botany of Desire, Desire by Michael Pollan. That's a great, great book. That may change your mind about plants.
I've actually read that book.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I have.
And here's one, Forest Forensics. I think this one interests Anne a lot, too.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in years past on the show. This book will tell you how to go into the forest and read the forest, what has happened there over the years and centuries, even. So that's a neat book. So if you're off hiking, you can do a little bit more than just concentrate on hiking the trail. You can look through the forest and say, geez, there must have been a farm here, or there must have been a crop field here, or they've logged here, and I can tell when they logged. So that's a pretty neat book.
And I think that's really interesting, like the stuff you said, did they log here, was there a house here, whatever?
Yeah.
Because it helps you learn about history, too. So you're learning about nature, you're learning about history, you're getting some exercise.
Yep,
working
indeed.
Your mind and your body at the same time.
Here's another one of those ones, What a Plant Knows by Daniel Kamovitz.
Yeah, I'm thinking Kamovitz.
Yeah, Kamovitz. real good one on the plants, the a lot of the science involved in a plant. This one, I talked about this one on the show, Flower Confidential by Amy Stewart. This is a book I picked up in Portland that I never thought I would be interested in, but it was the only one that caught my eye, so I said, I'll give it a try. And this one talks about the floriculture world, you know, cut florists and so on. And I found some of the information in here extremely interesting. And so I would highly recommend that one, too, even for a gardener, too, because you're going to find out where a lot of plants come from and why they come from those areas and what the growers do to those plants to ensure that they're nice and fresh by the time they get to you.
So you're getting some inside info of how Bob gets his information that he passes on to us.
Yeah. this is one I kind of picked up on a whim.
Yeah.
Beer. I don't drink beer, but I find the process of making beer extremely interesting, so I wanted to learn about it. And because it's becoming so popular, everybody making their own beer. And this is supposed to be one of the best additions for the beginner beer maker out there. It tells you about all the different materials, the different types of hops and how they grow. So that's a pretty interesting book. Even if you don't drink beer, it's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know that one.
Yeah, Emily Dickinson, her gardening life. This one talks about how a lot of the plants that she knew and how she put them into some of her stories. So that's a pretty interesting book for not just a gardener, but for people that like Emily Dickinson.
That's one of my favorite books. I love that book.
Secret Garden?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one, too. Not a whole lot for the gardener, but it's a great story that has to do with the garden and how it changed people's lives. Great book. I love it.
Oh, me too.
And you've heard me talk about Johnny Appleseed.
Yes.
And there's a few books out there about him and the theories about him. And we still have a lot to learn. But the information is out there. We just haven't dug deep enough yet. He's a very, very interesting character. And I'm going to talk about him in a few weeks here.
Okay.
This is a pretty neat book. This was given to me by a professor out at Pitt, Mary Mulcahy.
Oh, yeah.
The Ghost of Evolution by Connie Barlow. And this talks about certain plants and how they evolved and why they may still be here. And some of them, you know, have been a big question to us, like the locust tree, that a lot of the ones we have now don't have thorns on them. But at a time, the locust tree had thorns from the base all the way from the ground on up to 15 feet. And, of course, it's always been a big question, you know, why did it have all those thorns? And it develops a seed pod that no animal eats today. So they've scientists also wondered, well, you know, most crops or plants are grown so they can get their seeds dispersed to carry on their genes. But there's nobody out there to do that anymore for the locust, and especially with the thorns. Well, come to find out, it was a plant that evolved during the time of the mastodon. And it had all those thorns, so the mastodon couldn't bother the plant to the 15-foot tall mark. It couldn't harvest anything or chew the foliage or harm the tree. So it was a way of protecting itself during the time of the mastodon. So that's an interesting book.
Before we get to more books, Bob, Kara on Facebook Live has a question. She has any suggestions on how to grow a plum tree? She was given some seeds, and she would love to plant them.
Oh, okay. I think I would treat it just like any other seed. I would plant it now because it's going to have to go through a cold period to initiate. It might. A lot of those do, the fruit trees, to initiate germination. Has to go through that cold period. And then come spring with the freeze-thaw, that helps swell the seed so it can break the seed coat so it can germinate and start to grow. So that's one way I would do it. Another way to do it is if you have some seeds, dry them out, put them in a Ziploc bag, put them in the back of the refrigerator. That'll give them that cold period, that rest period that they need. And then come spring, early spring, bring them out and plant them and try to grow your plum tree from that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. It's kind of a fun thing to do. Growing anything from a seed is really an amazing thing to do.
Oh, yeah. I just, one more story before we go to break. There was a plum tree in my grandma's backyard, and my Uncle John, who just recently passed, every single spring he would have to go to grandma's house, because I lived there after my grandma, and he would have to go there and taste the plums every single year to make sure they were good.
Yeah.
Make sure they're good enough. So every time I see a plum tree or anything about a plum tree, I think about my grandma and my Uncle John.
Ah.
So we're going to go hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, but we will be right back on the Gardening Show.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. If it's time to seal your driveway, you'll find sealant, brushes, squeegees, everything you need for the job. They have a huge supply of railroad ties for your lawn and garden projects, leaf blowers in gas, battery, and corded electric models, and a brand new line of cordless Makita tools with interchangeable batteries. Your friends at Worth W. Smith hope you're staying safe and remind you to wear a mask, wash your hands, and observe social distancing whenever possible.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And as always, if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. You can send an email to garden@WESB.com, or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075. And hello to everybody who's watching us on Facebook Live, especially two of my favorite people in the world, Marie and Stephanie.
Hi, girls.
Okay, so Bob was telling us about some books that he likes to read in the wintertime, or has read in the wintertime.
Yeah. So again, you know, knowledge is king, and to make gardening more enjoyable, a little bit more knowledge is going to be very helpful, even if it's not on how to grow a plant, but where it came from, how it got traveled the world, why we use it today. So all those things can make it more interesting and make you a better gardener and really give you something to do in the winter. So another one, a very, very popular book, The Botany for Gardeners by Brian Capon, C-A-P-O-N. This is a great one. This is almost a must for any gardener because this is really going to explain it. It may seem like a textbook, but once you get into it, you'll find a lot of good information that will help you be a better gardener. One of my favorites, The Founding Gardeners.
Oh.
You know, we know about the founding fathers of this country. Well, those same guys were the founding gardeners of this country. They all experimented and explored with different plants and, of course, shared their knowledge, very freely shared their knowledge with other farmers and gardeners to make this country successful, because that's how this country began, as a really a farming community, and it still is. So this is a real good book, and it'll get into parts of those founding fathers and founding gardeners that maybe you never knew before.
Because, you've told a story about George Washington before, and that's really, really interesting. And we have a question from Joe. He says, have a question on when do you pick grapes?
Depending on whether they're blue grapes, red grapes, green grapes, when they finally develop that nice color. And if you're not sure of the color, just go to the grocery store and take a look. and, of course, they'll be nice and plump. There should be a time, too. I'm not real well-versed on grapes. I know it's going to be close to fall that you're going to pick the grapes. So just keep a close eye. Matter of fact, probably the best way to do it, and it is with a lot of crops, is pull one and taste it. And if it tastes great to you, then it's ready to harvest.
That's what I was going to say. I could be wrong because I'm getting older, my brain goes. But I think at my grandma's, she had Concord grapes.
Yeah.
And we used to pick the grapes kind of around the time we picked the blackberries, a little later than we picked the blackberries. Yeah. And they're like August-y blackberries.
And the different varieties of grapes are going to ripen and be ready for harvest at a little different time, too.
So Joe, taste them.
talking about grapes, an amazing thing to do is go to Westfield during the grape harvest. They basically grow one or two different varieties that all ripen the same time. That's where Welsh's grape juice began and still is. So the whole town is filled with that scent of grapes there. It's kind of a neat thing. And that's not far to go.
Oh, no. Westfield, New York, not Westfield, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, I remember the first time I drove through there. Oh, my gosh. It was, like, glorious. Smelling the grapes. It's way better than driving. No, I'm not going to say the other place driving through. But it's great driving through.
And while you're there, don't forget to look at the statue of Lincoln and the little girl in the square there, because that's a pretty important story and pretty neat story there.
There's so much history in Chautauqua County.
There is,
It's a great place to visit. You could spend like a whole summer just, I mean, and not just Chautauqua Institution, like the whole area. There's
the whole
just
area.
So much. Yep. Bob still has a couple more books, though, he wants to show us.
another neat one I've always liked, The History of Gardening by Neil Fairbrand. A lot of odd and different facts about the history of why we garden, with what plants, and how they became popular. Pretty interesting book. I use this one a lot. And I think that's it. There's about 200 more at home. I'm not going to bring them all in. But my point, I guess, is there's a lot of neat reading material for the gardener out there. And again, you know, knowledge is king. So the more you know about it, the more you're going to enjoy it, and the more successful you will be too.
And I didn't realize how many gardening books that I have until I'm redoing a couple of things in my apartment. And I said, oh, here's a gardening book. Here's a gardening book. Here's a gardening book. And then I was also looking to make sure that the Emily Dickinson book that I had in my office here was the one I was supposed to give to Bob and not the one I had at home.
Oh. So,
but I was surprised how many gardening books I had just because they looked interesting and not just like how-to books, but like the Emily Dickinson book and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good way to keep yourself busy during the winter.
It is indeed. And to gain more knowledge.
And we still have a couple minutes left if you have a question for Bob. You can give us a call at 368-9372-368-WESB. You can send us an email at garden@WESB.com. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075 and ask your question there. You'll see Bob's smiling face right there with a pile of books in front of him.
Just for the last couple minutes here, you know, I did talk about the locust tree and all the thorns and how it's one of the ghosts of evolution. Another real neat one that's always interested me, is the guan tassel tree in South America. It once relied on the giant sloth, a 3-ton, 20-foot tall animal, to harvest the fruit from it, carry it away from the base of the tree because the new trees will not grow at the base because they're too shaded. So the seed has to be carried away, but the giant sloth would feed on it, carry it away, and of course deposit it, the seed with a nice pile of fertilizer where the tree could continue to grow. Well, that went extinct, but luckily some of those trees could live for a long time. And along came the cavalry. The Spanish conquistadors brought the horse, the only other animal that seemed to like the fruit of the guan tassel tree. So they would feed on it, and just like the giant sloth did, and carry it and plant it somewhere else and spread the seeds once again so that tree could continue. Otherwise, it would probably have been lost to mankind totally. But there's a lot of neat stories like that with the ghost of evolution. Another one would be the Osage orange. That's an interesting tree. And it develops a big orange fruit, but no one would want to eat it. It's a great big, ugly-looking orange. And the tree gets quite large, and it has a lot of thorns on it, so there's not too many animals that will go to it. But again, that was one of the ones that the mammoth really enjoyed that could harvest the fruit because of their trunk could get past those big thorns. They're huge thorns. There's not a lot of them. You know, they're spaced far apart, but they're huge. And, of course, the American natives love the Osage orange because of its wood.
Oh.
It's a very, very hard, strong wood, but will bend forever and not break.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it made a great wood for making bow and arrow because they could make a stronger bow with the Osage orange.
Oh, that's really neat.
And it's a pretty wood, too. It's yellow. Yeah, the wood inside is all yellow.
I have never even heard of that.
Oh.
Where do they grow?
They used to grow around here, but of course they've been lost since the loss of the mastodons. But down south, even Pennsylvania south, you know, there's a lot of them. And a lot of people used to like to plant them all along their fence line because the animals would not go through a hedge of Osage orange because of the thorns. So it made a nice living fence. So down south, you still get to see them in pastures in a straight line or maybe even on a farm in a small yard where animals can't get to the vegetable garden because nothing will pass through. Those thorns are like 3 or 4 inches long and just like little needles.
Wow.
So nothing will go through that. It protects that piece of property.
Okay. So a couple of weeks ago, we learned about mullein. Now we learn about Osage orange. And in the last couple of seconds here, Bob, Ryan wants to know, when do you know to harvest your zucchini and squash?
Okay. Zucchini, for some of us, it's different. Now, at our house, we like to harvest our zucchini before it's a foot long. We like them young and tender without a lot of seed inside. Some people like to let their zucchini grow longer. It can grow 3 or 4 foot long. And they can make a squash or zucchini bread with it, and that makes it great for them. So it's really up to you, but I like to harvest them when they're less than a foot long.
Okay. All righty. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will see you all next week on The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris.